This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Today, I have actually my first female on the podcast, and her name is Grace Chung. She is a purple belt, training out of NKS in Willowdale. And she has been a friend of mine for quite some time, actually probably as long as I've been doing jiu-jitsu, last 5.5 years. Wonderful training partner. She's teaching the beginner's class, one of the beginner's classes there at NKS as well. And she's also my official timekeeper of the bunker tournament, which means she presses the button for the timer to go on and off. Yeah, I'm really, really happy to have her today. Grace, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks for having me. Kind of honored that I'm your first female guest, but yeah.
100%. And a lot of people might not know this, but Grace, you're also, not only are you a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, I'm sure you'll tell us a little bit about your story, but recently you've also started judo.
I started June of last year. So it's been under a year, and it's been interesting. I like it.
Yeah, and you're already competing as well, which is awesome.
Yeah, I had two judo comps already.
Amazing. Well, we'll get to that. Yeah. I'm gonna rewind, and I want you to tell us a little bit. So tell us a little bit about yourself, like, you know, what's your background, what do you do for a living, and how did you, like, how long have you been doing jiu-jitsu? And we'll take it from there.
Okay, so my background, I actually have a clinical background. So I used to work in diagnostic imaging. Mm-hmm. My specific discipline was nuclear medicine. And honestly, I chose it because it sounded cool. I didn't really know what I was in for, but that's the truth. But it is pretty interesting. I won't go into details in terms of what it is because, you know, you can Google it. But I got to play with a lot of radioactive isotopes and lots of cool equipment, diagnostic equipment. And then I did that for a few years, had some very interesting clinical experiences, and then decided I wanted to come back to Toronto. So I was practicing out in Saskatchewan. I wanted to come back to Toronto, ended up doing my master's degree in management. And then I ended up working with health tech startups. So another aspect of the healthcare system, and got a lot of exposure into entrepreneurship, the different types of innovative solutions that were being developed by really creative people that could make it to the bedside. And then I got, recruited, for lack of a better word, or poached, because it's the same boss, poached to where I am now, which is at Baycrest. So it's been quite a journey.
And I know Baycrest.
I work in a more like project management capacity now. So I get to pull on my clinical experiences. I meet with clinical staff, frontline workers, and try to understand what the issues and problem areas are and what the challenges are. And then I go out into the marketplace, and this is where the sort of startup experience is handy, seeing what sort of solutions are out there that could possibly meet those needs and try to facilitate those relationships, broker those relationships so that we do use technology to solve these healthcare problems. And so it's been quite a journey. That's my background in terms of what I do for a living. And then jiu-jitsu, I started that when I came back to Toronto. I came back to Toronto in 2016, actually, I lied. So a year after I came back, because I came back and did a year of school. So I started in 2017, right after I graduated, actually. Before I went to Saskatchewan, I was doing Muay Thai. So I was kind of like a Muay Thai girly, I guess. And when I went out to Saskatchewan, I was like, where are all the Muay Thai gyms? And I had no car back then. I was like, I am not walking on the highway in the middle of the night, in the middle of a field. So I took a break from any sort of martial arts. But then when I came back to Toronto, I went back to the gym, Bazooka, to do Muay Thai again. But I had dabbled a little bit in, they had offered a bit of like MMA / Greco-Roman wrestling type of classes as well. So I dabbled a little bit. And then when I came back, they didn't have that anymore, but they had jiu-jitsu. That's when Arthur was teaching. So that's when I first met Arthur and the Bazooka Gang and a lot of people who I still train with to the day to this day at NKS. And so that's when I started. Took a little bit of a backseat during COVID and then went right back into it. So that's been my journey so far.
Yeah, I think actually probably the first time I met you was at Bazooka.
Because I think so, yeah.
Because I started coming, like, yeah, back when the Bazooka program was running, and then Arthur kind of, it stopped, and then everything kind of moved over to NKS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think, yeah, that's where I met you. I met Victor Boutart.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, he was like hardcore there. I think he might still be, I'm not sure if he's still there or not, but I think the jiu-jitsu program folded, right? I think they went straight back into like just more MMA stuff.
I think so. I'm not too sure, but yeah, I think they have some sort of program still there. But that's where I met a lot of the jiu-jitsu friends that I've made throughout the years.
Sure.
And continue to stay in contact. I think it's been really great because, especially in terms of what Arthur has created for the community, it's like, it's all about community. It's all about longevity in the sport. And so, you know, there's been no big issues around cross training. It's like, hey, come on in and come to the gym and train with us, et cetera. So, I try not to get into the politics of things. So,
sure.
But for me as just a student, it's like, hey, I get to meet, you know, students from other jiu-jitsu gyms. They might have a different game, different body types, different styles, and we get to roll and learn with each other and then eventually becomes friends. So, I mean,
sure. For
me as a student, it's just great.
Yeah, 100%. So did you, you've been training for a while, actually, like,
yep.
For jiu-jitsu, you started jiu-jitsu in 2016 or after that?
In 2017, when I came back. So I came back to Toronto in 2016, did a year of school. It was out in Mississauga, so I was just focused on school. And then when I graduated in 2017 is when I moved back to Scarborough and then started up martial arts, specifically jiu-jitsu again.
So like about 8 years now. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been quite some time.
Nice. So when did you, how many years did you train at Bazooka?
Ooh, I'm really bad with dates.
All about COVID or maybe right after?
Yeah, pretty much right up until COVID.
About 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. And then transferred to NKS.
So did you get your blue belt at Bazooka?
I want to say yes.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Blue belt at Bazooka and then purple at NKS.
Sure. But you just followed Arthur anyways. You were all
busy. Exactly.
So, nice. Great. So 8 years. And so then then Arthur moved over to NKS. A lot of the students went over there. And then you were training there. And then you got your purple belt, I think, was it 2 years ago?
I want to say two and a half years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have some really funny stories about grading and having to miss grading because of different things.
The stories.
Well, one, my car broke down on the way to grading and Belinda was there. Arthur's wife, Belinda, was there. And she dropped by to make sure that I was okay. So it was really much appreciated because it was the first time I'm like coming off the highway and my car just stops and all the lights are going. I'm like, what is going on? Let's get off the highway. Let's pull into like a safer, quieter road. And then, you know, all that hoo-ha. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to miss grading. The other time, I think I was sick real bad. And then the most recent one that I missed, I think the one in the winter, probably, I was out west. So yeah, I have a pretty bad track record when it comes to grading, but yeah. So yeah.
That's okay.
Life happens.
100%. Okay. So you've been doing it for about 8 years. You're at NKS now. You're teaching now as well.
Yes.
So how long have you been teaching?
I think it's been around a year or a little bit over a year now. I started with Sheehan or Mark Manalo at NKS. He offered me the opportunity to start helping with the kids class, which is twice a week. And so I started off that, and then he offered me another opportunity in terms of teaching the Friday evening sort of more beginners class. And so, yeah, it's been around, I would say, over a year now, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I come sometimes to your Friday class. because I don't care. I'm still a beginner. That's how I feel. And I think it's really great to be able to always do fundamentals over and over again, because there's a lot of holes in our games and sometimes we miss things. So, and it's also good just to drill things that you think you know that you really don't know. So I love your classes.
But, thank you.
Yeah, I think you're great. And I'm not just saying that because we're friends. I would tell you it sucked. Maybe
it
not
keeps
on.
Me, keeps me on my toes. I need to know my shit.
Yeah, exactly. So I would tell you. But do you find – so, okay, before that question, did you always want to teach jiu-jitsu, like, or teach martial arts? Or is this something that kind of like as you learned and you got better and you kind of were getting more involved, it's something that kind of piqued your interest, you know, along the journey?
I think I was interested if the opportunity came my way. It wasn't something that I was actively seeking out or that it was like a goal of mine per se, but I was open to the opportunity. I do have a background. When I was in high school, I did teach swimming. I was a swim instructor too. So I do have that experience in terms of teaching sport, I guess, recreational sport. So I get to pull on that sort of experience too. I did teach more adults back then. Or older kids versus younger kids. So it is a bit different because a lot of the kids that I do teach jiu-jitsu at NKS tend to be on the younger side. But it's been a really interesting experience, a really rewarding experience, because especially for the younger kids and even the older adults who are like more on the beginner side, when they start, you can see in their heads, in their eyes, like when something makes sense, It clicks. Yeah, exactly. That aha moment, right? Like when you see that, it's like, oh my God, yes, you get it. I'm so happy for them. And then they're so happy for themselves and you can see them like walking around like, I got it. Yay. I don't know. It's just really rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you mentioned experience. I don't know. Like I think experience is part of it, but it also has to do with the person's character. Like there's just some people who are naturally gifted at teaching, at breaking things down, at conveying. There are a lot of people who don't have that gift, and that's fully fine. Like, there's some people that are doers, and they just, like, I have a lot of my friends, not just in jiu-jitsu, but if we use jiu-jitsu as an example, I have friends of mine who are phenomenal jiu-jitsu players, but if you ask them, how did you do this, they're like, I have no clue how to explain it to you. I just do it. So they can't put it into words, or they can't break it down in a way where they can teach somebody else. And then there's just some people who have that kind of personality to do it. And it works in all fields, not just jiu-jitsu. Like, you have that type of personality. You have the ability to break things down to like make it intelligible for other people. Right. I do it as a priest. Like, you know, it's like as a priest, what am I doing most of the time? Just teaching, right? I teach at the seminary. I teach theology. So I have an interest in teaching as well. And I find that it also translates into jiu-jitsu that one day, if I ever get the opportunity, I don't know if I will, but if I ever have the opportunity to pass any kind of knowledge on, maybe when I'm a higher belt and I know a few things, then I'm definitely like, I enjoy, like you said, passing on and then seeing other people having that joy that you have, you know, it's nice, right? It's, I don't know, when you see your students like do things that you taught them, not from an egotistical point of view, but it gives you joy that they get it and that they're able to apply it.
And you're passing on the knowledge, whether it's a little kid or whether it's somebody older or whether it's like a one-to-one just giving tips and advice and then they try it and it works for them. It's like, okay, cool. Or whether it's in a smaller or maybe even larger group setting, like a class setting, the whole knowledge exchange or knowledge sharing, I think is something that's really ingrained in the culture of jiu-jitsu. That's something that I've noticed. And yes, I do agree. Some people are really good, you know, athletes or really good students. They can perform, etc., but they're not necessarily the best instructors or coaches. And it's okay. Like everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses, etc. And if you want to work on your weaknesses, yeah, go for those opportunities. Ask your coach if you can try or even like assist during a teaching session or just watch to see what they do and the sort of background work that they do to prepare for those lessons. So to me, it's both rewarding but also a learning experience because I'm learning from, for example, Arthur or Belinda or Sheehan or even one of my training partners, Ren, in terms of like what sort of strategies or even what language do they use depending on who they're teaching? Like
Yes.
sometimes I really got a code switch. I can't say the same things that I would say to an adult that I would to a kid, right? So
Yes.
it's a learning experience for me too.
Yeah. And you mentioned that like the preparation that goes into it. So for you, everyone's process is different, but like what is your kind of what's your process for preparing for a class you want to teach?
So my classes, like I do warm-ups in my classes,
I know
which
you
is
do, and I love you for it.
I know it's not the typical or it's not the favorite thing,
It is typical.
but I start with like the warm-up. Like yeah, I want people to get their blood going. I want them to be warm so that they're not jumping into things cold. And I try to do warm up, I guess, moves where it will kind of lead to what I'm teaching. In terms of kids, it's just okay, if I notice and like Ren notices, oh, they're really high energy today. We need to like expend some energy. Otherwise, when you're trying to teach them jujitsu, it's just gonna be chaos, right? So it's like, okay, come on, let's do walking lunges or let's do bear crawls and try to make it fun, like a competition or whatever, to expend some of that energy. So in terms of like the warm up, it's like okay, I play it by ear depending on what I see, and then in terms of the technique itself, I try to not jump all over the place. So if we're covering a particular theme or topic for the next few weeks, then it's all right, let's stick with this, and then I'll prepare by okay, I know how I do it, how do other people do it, and then work from there. On Fridays, actually, I've been starting to switch off, so alternating weeks with another one of my longtime training partners, Jure. And it's partly because I want to like train more judo, but we'll coordinate with each other in terms of okay, this is the topic that we'll cover. What part of passing are you doing this week? Knee slices, okay, cool. What type of knee slice? And then I'll build off on that because I also want to make sure that it's not too repetitive, and that
Sure.
there's progression and people are,
But you
you know,
want to
engaged.
string them together, right? Like you want to make sense, like help them build a game that makes sense as opposed to completely different areas of the game, right?
Like because, you know, I mean, if I'm jumping all over the place, then it's like there's no time to at least. Based on my experience, there's no time to fully absorb or practice a particular technique before you're jumping to something completely different.
Yes.
That might work for some people, but just from my experience, it's better when there's some level of consistency.
100%. And this is the way, like, yeah, this is also like our instructors too, because we both share instructor in Arthur and in Sheehan, like Mark. But especially with Arthur, like, yeah, some instructors will teach too many techniques in one session. And there's only so much the human brain can absorb. I find the sweet spot is like three. Like, if you only have like an hour of technique, let's say, or of teaching, or 45 minutes before you go into rolling, let's say, yeah, like, three, four maximum. And even four, it's like maybe just different permutations of the same kind of position, like different types of triangles or different entries, right? And that's enough. Like less is more. Because I find like if I'm in a class and the instructor has gone to like, now we're on the eighth permutation, I don't remember anything from the class.
Exactly. It's like,
Yeah.
what did we do like 20
Too
minutes ago?
much. Yeah. It's too much. It's better to like focus on one or two things and do them really well and then
Exactly.
implement them and then move like slower is faster, right? So nice. So do you like do you write in a notebook? Do you look at videos? Like, how do you do your thing? I don't want to give you all your secrets. You don't have to answer.
I don't mind. I look at a lot of videos. I don't go searching on YouTube. Like, I've fallen into the trap, I guess, in terms of like those short form pieces of information. So I'll go to like YouTube Shorts or maybe like Instagram, mostly Instagram, and bookmark things, review things there, watch those videos. And then in terms of after class, it's been on and off, but lately it's been pretty consistent, which I'm happy about is I will write down notes in terms of today we did this, these are the key points of this technique, and just write it out. Because for me, writing things out helps me remember.
Yes.
Watching something will help me remember. And if I can remember after class when I'm like tired and I want to go to sleep and it's like, okay, what did we do today? How does that technique work? And why do we do this particular thing for this technique? Then it's like, oh, okay, great. And then I can look back on it. So I know it's pretty old school because, you know, there's digital tools and things out there. But for me, it's just something that works for me. So yeah, videos and writing notes after class. And sometimes they're just short notes because maybe it's a technique that's a review of something that I already know.
Yes.
But then it's also a reminder, oh, we did this day. Remember, like you did it. So review it. Maybe go back to your old notes and see if you can add more to it, right? More details. Because for me, I noticed that the details matter.
Sure.
I'm a bit detail oriented that way. Some might say nitpicky, but whatever. Yeah, those are just some of the techniques that I use.
Well, jiu-jitsu is all about details. Like if you can't be good at jiu-jitsu, if you're not nitpicky about your technique, right? Like that's the difference between one could say, okay, a blue belt, right? And a black belt or a brown belt. And the purple is where you're supposed to be cleaning all that up, they say, right? So yeah, okay, I know how to do like a tripod sweep, but do I really know how to do it perfectly, unstoppable, surgical? I was talking to Arthur about this recently. I'm like, you know, Arthur, it's like I've been training now for 5.5 years. I'm at the top of blue, I guess you could say. There's a few positions that I've been working for a while now, but I go, you know, looking into the next year of my training, it's like I don't want to learn more. I just want to like refine the things that I've been doing, but I want to get to the point where there's no mistakes, there's no holes, there's nothing. It's just basically, it's like I can do it in my sleep no matter what and just keep drilling that. I'd rather know 5 things as a black belt, but do them and nobody can stop me, than knowing like, you know, 100 different things like half-assed.
Yeah, it's like the discussion between being a generalist versus a specialist.
Correct.
There's a time and place for that kind of stuff. But then also a really interesting question, and I think somebody has said this to me before, probably Arthur. It's like, what kind of X belt do you want to be, right? Like what kind of brown belt do I want to be? What kind of black belt do I want to be? I might not know everything because I think pretty much at black belt, you're just still learning stuff. It's like you don't stop learning once you reach black belt. You still learn the sport and the techniques and everything is evolving all the time. But do I want to be a black belt who can do an ankle lock, but they're sloppy all the time so I can never finish it? No, right? I mean, maybe some people will be happy about that. Oh, I can get it there. I just don't finish it and whatever. But for me, it's like, no, if I want to be a specialist in, for example, ankle locks, it's like by the time I'm black belt, I want to be able to do it with my eyes closed, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, everybody has their own goals and objectives and ideas of what they want to be at that whatever level. Like they might want to be like, I want to be a world champion. Like, okay, great. That's your goal, right? Like you do you, right? So I don't know. For me, that's been percolating recently a lot in my head in terms of what kind of X belt do you want to be? What kind of jiu-jitsu student or what kind of jiu-jitsu coach do you want to be? So I think it's really important to think about those things and not just, you know, just go to class or whatever. There should be some sort of intent. And I think a couple of people have mentioned this before in your other podcast, your previous podcast too. So I think I agree with that or prescribe to that train of thought.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like, because you look at like famous black belts, they're specialists as well. Like they're very few. I don't know of any, like it's like that they're good at everything because you can't be, it's just, there's too many moves, right? So most black belts, like even ones like, for example, you bring somebody for a seminar, right? They're known for something. So this particular guy, he's known for his butterfly, right? And he's really perfected that. He may not be great at ankle locks, like you said, right? Because maybe he doesn't work that and he doesn't pretend to be an expert in ankle locks. He won't teach it, but like, or he'll teach it, but like he's not teaching it in seminars or being paid to teach it, right? And somebody else is an expert in like half guard and somebody else is an expert. So that's okay. As long as, what do you want to be? That's the, like I'm trying to figure that out. I have an idea in my mind, or now it's fairly early on, but you know, I have an idea what I'm gravitating towards and what I tend to be good at. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to train other things,
but
I want to like really, like, there's gotta be at least one or two things that I don't want to be just good at. I want to be great at. Those are the things that are going to win you competitions, right? Those are the things that are going to distinguish you from somebody else, right? So that's the question, right? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Nobody really has kind of posed it like that so far on the podcast, so that's good.
Well, I will say, like I said, it's not my question. It's a question that somebody like posed to me, so I'm just sharing the knowledge.
So, okay, so we talked about your journey. We talked about your teaching. We talked about your profession. You compete as well.
Yes.
Okay, so
I try.
When did you start competing? Like at white?
Yeah, I distinctly remember this. 1 year into jiu-jitsu, I was still white belt. I decided, okay, it's been a year. Let's try to compete. Let's challenge myself a little bit more. And I do remember that fight, Toronto Open. Arthur was there. Belinda was there. Actually, former boss, he was there. Some of the founders that I worked with were there. I'm like, dude, you guys don't have to be here. But thank you, because you're taking time out of your like personal lives. So I remember that one. I also remember getting my butt handed to me, because I didn't really expect, like, I didn't know what that sort of environment was.
Were you nervous?
Oh yeah, I was nervous. Like, you know how people have nervous poos, like their body reacts to certain things? I was nervous, but mentally I didn't know what sort of mental sort of preparation I had to do. People gave their advice and I listened to all of it, but I didn't know how I would react, because it was my
you
first
have to find
of,
your own way.
Exactly.
Doesn't
like,
matter
you don't
what
know other... until you do it, until you put yourself in that situation. So I learned a lot, and then ever since then I've used competition to either test myself or challenge myself. It's always been some sort of way to challenge myself. It's just,
yes.
Why? It's like, why am I competing? Why am I putting myself in this stressful situation? Why am I, you know, in terms of comp prep, because you're familiar with it too. Why am I putting myself through this? What is the goal, right?
Sure.
And that has evolved over time. I do remember competing a lot during Blue Belt. And of course, pre-COVID. And then post-COVID, when things opened up, the competition started again. I was super nervous, even more so than like any other time, because I was like, do I still have it in me? And also, like, I didn't want to, you know, embarrass myself in front of so many people. Now I don't really care about that kind of thing. But back then I was really, really nervous, because it was the first big one back. And then, you know, just a handful of competitions here and there. It's I think a little bit challenging in terms of my bracket or my weight category, because I tend to be, you know, a bigger girl, and there are bigger girls out there who do train jiu-jitsu, but they're not necessarily interested in competing. And I mean, we can go down the rabbit hole in terms of women in jiu-jitsu and body image and self-defense and all of that stuff. Like, there's so many topics specific to women in jiu-jitsu, or even if you want to take a big step back, women in sport, especially in male-dominated sports. But I have noticed that as I get older, so there's an age factor too. As I get older, I'm master one now. I'll be master two soon.
I'm master's three, guys.
Well, I guess it depends if it's the Ontario, the OJA version, or if it's the IBJJF version. IBJJF version, I'll be master three soon.
Me too. I mean, a master's two. Yeah, the local ones are 10-year, like, decade bracket.
Yeah.
Right? You know, 30s, 40s, 50s. But in IBJJF, it's every 5 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just depending on which one you're using. As I get older, I have noticed that there are fewer and fewer competitors, especially on the local scene, in my particular weight category as well as age bracket. And so I did try my hand at some of the more non-local competitions, and that in itself was also another big experience, different side of competition that I hadn't experienced before. So for me, whenever I get the opportunity, and I don't want to put it out there that it depends on other people too, but if you don't have a competitor in your bracket, like you're not competing, and I don't want a participation medal, so I'm signing up to fight to test myself. So it can be a complex topic, I guess, to unpack sometimes. But for me, if the opportunity is there because other girls show up, then why not?
Yeah, sometimes like I think all of that is true what you just said. And I also get it, not to the same extent as you do, because yes, there are relatively much less women. And especially in the super heavy or ultra heavy, like in the heavier brackets, right? I'm ultra heavy, of course. I'm a big guy too. We rolled. I love it because we roll together. It's great,
Yep, it's always
right?
a fun time.
It's a fun time, and you give me a run for my money. It's really, really hard. I'm not being nice about it. I'm actually quite upset because you beat me quite a few times, and it's hard. It's hard to find people in the super heavy or ultra heavy. When you're purple, it's even worse because I have you noticed the strange phenomenon that. Generally across the board, whether it's local or okay, when we talk about IBJJF Worlds is different, but I mean local tournaments. For some reason, the purple belt level is the least attended.
Yeah, I have noticed that. Like, I think you're the one who mentioned this to me before too, where it does seem to take a dip.
A big dip. Yeah, it's like
Yeah.
purple, whites, purple, blue is the biggest division. A lot of people compete at blue. And then a lot of people compete at brown and black. And purple is like the least amount. So it's really hard to find competitors in purple at
I
all.
wonder if that's the same for the women's, because
I think it's across the board.
across the board. Okay.
I've seen like now, okay, I haven't done a study on it. But from what I've noticed from looking at the local, the signups, there are much fewer purples than there are blues, for example, right?
Yeah, like it trickles down.
Yeah, have you seen it? Like, you were competing in blue and now you're competing in purple. Do you find that there are way more competitors, even in your age group, in your bracket, when you were in blue?
Oh, definitely.
See? Yeah.
And some of them, like, they're the same competitors that I see consistently. So, I mean, yeah, I do see that sort of like, the funnel, the numbers funnel, where it kind of decreases. So I do see that. I
Yeah, I don't
try
know.
to, I for me, it's like, oh, okay, well, if you show up, I'll try to show up too. There are other, so that's the thing. A lot of jiu-jitsu folks are doing this because they love it. They're not making a living out of it. And they also have other priorities too. Like they have jobs, they have families, they might, maybe their kids are younger kids, and so they're doing extracurriculars with them or helping them with schoolwork or, housework, et cetera, right? So I mean, like I'm like your classic Libra in a sense, where I see multiple sides. I might not have a particular opinion on certain things, but I try to understand, okay, maybe this is why, and that's why, there's fewer women competitors in particular brackets, et cetera. Like some people are just not comfortable and they've tried it, and it's like, you know what, it's not for me. And I respect that.
Yeah, I have another theory. It could, and I'm not basing it on like doesn't mean I'm right. It's just a theory. I have a theory that purple is less because it's like culture in the jiu-jitsu world. It seems like purple is this. You're in the middle, right? You're in the middle of your jiu-jitsu journey. Like you're not a white, blue, purple's right in the middle, smack dab in the middle, and then you have your brown and your black, right? And you know how we've heard this before. It's like purple is a time where you kind of like, okay, now you've had you have your you should have good fundamentals. You have a good foundation. You're kind of gravitating towards a certain game. And purple is where you're kind of cleaning it all up and you're trying to refine it, moving towards not being an expert, but being proficient in brown and black, right? Because brown and black, let's face it, there's not a big difference between a lot of browns and black belts. That's why in the local tournaments, the brown and black belts fight against each other. They compete against each other, right? Like in the open,
They mix it.
mix it, right? Because the level is so close there, right? Like, So purple, I think like a lot of people, and I can just say from a lot of my friends, what they say is that when they go to purple, even ones who compete a lot, they kind of take a step back from competing to focus more on their technique and like refine gym. And it's kind of like, okay, I did a bunch of competition now. Now I want to spend some time, you know, really kind of going back to the lab, I guess you could say, and, you know, really kind of working my game and finding out where I'm at and where I want to be in the second half, right, of my jiu-jitsu journey. And I'm not saying this is the case for everybody. I've noticed this with a lot of my purple belt friends where they're kind of getting into this creative mode where they're comfortable with the fundamentals and now they're trying to experiment with new things and just trying to like learn new things, but also if like it's just a different type of headspace. And I find like a lot of my friends, yeah, like they'll step back, they'll slow down in purple. And then near the end of purple and then beginning of brown, they start to compete again. So maybe that is a common phenomenon. I don't know if that's everybody. Of course, it's not everyone. You can't know. Like you said, there's factors, jobs and lives and things like that. Like you said, everybody joins jiu-jitsu and does jiu-jitsu at different age groups as well. But let's say if you look at the average person who maybe starts jiu-jitsu in their 20s, right? Or 18, like their late teens, early 20s, if that's a thing even, because I started late, I started 38 years old. Right. I'm old, but, you know, it makes also sense that, you know, if you're, let's say 20 and you start jiu-jitsu and then, you know, 5-6 years in, you're a blue belt, let's say, and now maybe you're in a relationship and then maybe now you got married or maybe, you know, like, you know, that time period, you know, like the 20s and 30s, right? Like, it's like, maybe you get married, maybe you start having children, you can't train as much. It makes a lot of sense that by the time you hit purple belt in your life kind of journey, not everybody, of course, but like this is a generalization, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, like other things take precedence, right? If I have like three little tiny kids now, I'm not going to be going competing in the worlds. Like some people do.
Some people do. But I think it just depends on, you know, everybody's priorities.
Correct.
And time commitments to certain things are different. Yeah. And
100%.
At the end of the day, like, you do you, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. And it's different factors.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it easier for you trying to find competition partners, right?
No, but that's okay. Because, I mean, this, like, I did take a little bit of a step back after Blue because we noticed that my game was, like, the same thing. Like, I love pressure passing, right? So.
Yeah, I know you do.
But the thing is, I had a really bad guard, like almost a non-existent guard game, and it's like, dude, you're at the end of blue, you're gonna be a purple belt, do you still really want to have a really bad guard game or not even be able to play guard? It's like, no, not really. So that's when it's like, okay, let's take a step back, maybe not compete as much. So I did take a year off of, I think almost a year off of competing, and just worked on guard. It was different. But now I'm way too comfortable on my back. So it's like, you got to mix it up, right? And take that time to focus on other things. So yeah, I take in all of the advice and the feedback that my training partners, my coaches, sometimes advice online that I read about, which, you know, sometimes the internet is not the most reliable place, but
sure.
That's another topic. I absorb these different pieces of information and try to synthesize it in a way that works for me and my lifestyle and my priorities and my goals. So,
proves my point, but you turn purple and then Arthur's like, maybe you shouldn't compete for a bit so you can do some guard. So it's exactly what I was saying. It's like,
yeah,
okay, now it's purple. I did this thing for blue. I've kind of mastered this part of my game, but I need to fix this part of my game, or I need to supplement. Bring up this other level so I'm well-rounded, right?
Yeah, like evolve in a different way.
Yeah, evolve, yeah. And purple is that place where you need to do that, right? Because you can't go into brown and black having, like, fundamental gaps in your game, right? You got to shore up the things that are have to be there. You have to know these things, right? So that's what I think is – you said it yourself. Like, that's what I think is happening with a lot of purple belts, right? Mm-hmm. They're taking the time to kind of, like, refine. So – yeah, but you know, it's okay. Like, I don't have a lot of people either in mind in all local tournaments. I'll be lucky if I get one or two. Like, we have the Ontario Open coming up, but by the time this podcast airs, this episode will be after the Ontario Open, but we're both competing and it's like we both have one person in our bracket. right?
Yeah.
So
I
that's
think,
okay.
yeah, exactly. Go out there and have fun. Don't get injured. Do your best.
Don't
And
get
it's
injured.
another experience to, you know, add to your arsenal of knowledge in terms of, okay, this is what happened. This is what I need to work on. Let's go
Sure.
back and work on it.
Sure. So as well, we've been talking for a good 45 minutes. Can you believe that? It's time
Wow.
by. Okay, so kind of to like wrap up, because I try to keep the podcast within an hour. That's kind of like the sweet spot I find. It's kind of funny. Somebody asked me like, "Oh, you really do have a podcast? I thought you were just joking and trolling people." I'm like, "No, I have a real, I have a real podcast." And like, "Oh, how long is it?" I'm like, 45 to an hour." Like, okay, that's manageable because that's fine. I'll listen. If it's more than that, I can't. I'm like, okay, I get it. Thank you. You can turn it off. You know, I said it's okay. You don't have to listen to the whole thing. You know, as far as your connection to the bunker, because it's interesting, your connection to the bunker, you were not one of the originals in the old bunker. And what do I mean by the old bunker? It's like the old, like, you know, actual room.
Yeah.
Because I knew you back then, but I didn't know you that well. You were training a different club. And so, you know, and yeah, so what, you weren't one of the OGs, I guess you could say. You kind of got connected to it later when we turned it into an actual tournament. And unfortunately, you haven't competed in it because this past year it went all blue, and the year before that, when you were the first time keeper, when it was at the new location, it was mixed belt, but for some reason you couldn't compete. I remember we didn't have a female division yet.
Yeah, I don't think, I think this past December was when you
The
had your
first time,
first female division. Yeah.
yeah, I didn't have any females. Like, you were willing, I think, but we didn't have any other females. The year before, I wanted to have girls compete, but there wasn't anybody willing at that time, and so we didn't have anybody for you. Big surprise. There you go. Same thing again. And now it's like now it's a blue belt competition, which means you can't compete in it anyways, which is sad. But I'm thinking, and we've been brainstorming this with some of the other people on the podcast, it's like that maybe in the future we'll do some super fights, you know, like some higher belt super fights, like maybe have like a black belt super fight, maybe have a purple belt just for fun to open up the thing, right? And then we can go into the regular tournament. So maybe.
That
You
would be fun. I'd be down for that.
know, maybe we'll find another purple belt to fight you, and we'll do something like just to open up the tournament. So anything's possible. It'd be nice to get you on the bunker mats at least once.
Yeah, it'd be nice to participate on the mats.
But it's, you know, it's growing, I think, and I appreciate your help. I appreciate everybody's volunteerism with
Yeah,
the
well,
tournament.
thank you.
Yeah, it's a fun event, and it wouldn't be it'd be much harder to run if I didn't have like good friends to come in and step in like last minute and cover things, and you know, like, "Hey Grace, can you please do this? Because I didn't even think about this." Like, that was like 2 years ago. I was like, "I need somebody to do the timer," and you're like, "Oh, I'll do it." I'm like, "Thank you, because I can't do anything." You know,
Well, I'm more than happy to help. I think it's for a really good cause, like, you know, collecting, you know, food donations for people who need it, collecting gis with Project X Guard for kids, you know, who might really benefit from jiu-jitsu or some, not necessarily jiu-jitsu per se, but like in this case it is, but you know, just structured sport, extracurriculars, right?
Yes.
To keep them engaged, etc.
The
So
discipline, yeah.
exactly. So I think it's for a good cause, and I'm more than happy to help.
Well, I appreciate it. And even for the blue belts who are participating, like, that's like, for me, that's just as much a not charity, but I mean the opportunity to be able to have that kind of safe space for them to train, like to compete and not be kind of afraid. Not like this nerve-wracking thing that we went through the first time we competed, you know, and just to be able to kind of go and test out their skills, maybe kind of prepare themselves for like an actual, like a more like official competition, I guess you could say, right? So we'll see where the tournament goes in the future. But yeah, no, I do appreciate, because like NKS is like a big, your crew and all the friends that you've been kind of training with are a big part of the bunker journey, because the bunker really was just originally it was just two places. It was students, or it was people training from just two clubs. It was JT6, or sorry, it was Rev MMA originally, and then NKS, and that was the original people. Then of course we incorporated JT6 a little bit into it the second year, and now of course other places are coming as well. So, but those are the original, the OG kind of like two clubs that had the most friendships and, you know, people knowing each other, right? So it's nice to have people involved in it from the very beginning.
And I hope it keeps expanding. I think it's a really great thing because, like you said, it gives people who might be interested in competing, seeing what it's like to do it in a safer space, maybe more friendlier space than in a big stadium, lots of people that you don't know, yelling, the noise, overstimulation, etc. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I hope it keeps going for a really, really long time.
I hope so, but I want to ask your opinion, and then we'll close with that, I think. You said expanding. It's like, I'm always on the fence with this. People have asked me about this. It's like, should we keep it? Because I'm trying to get a poll going, all the guests and people have been involved in it and know me and know like the bunker. Like right now, it's in a banquet hall. It's kind of like this cool little intimate thing, like a
Yep.
who's not. I call it like the who's number one of Toronto, right? Because I like to get food, maybe next year, maybe drinks. You know,
Chocolate.
yeah. Well, chocolate was there, but you know, awake chocolate was there, the caffeinated chocolate.
Yep.
But you know, like I want to make it more like you know, like yeah, you can sit in tables and it's more like a spectator thing as well. This is. For me, my ultimate goal is the tournament itself is kind of like it's organized now, right? Like the structure we have is there. It works. 16 people is a good number for the males at least. And then we had only I think we only had four girls. I made a mistake. I think in my last podcast I said that we had like eight, but I think we only had four.
Yep, four.
But even if we had like even up to eight, let's say, it's manageable, right? It's 3 hours. It was 2.5 this year, this past year. Even if it was up to three, I think that's a manageable time for an evening to do it. And it keeps it intimate. And then some other people have been telling me, well, you should make it bigger. Like you should make it like go big. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if bigger is always better. I think perhaps we always just keep it small. And I want to ask your opinion. Like, what do you think about that?
I guess it depends on what your goals are
That's a Libra.
for, no. It depends on what your goals are in terms of what you want it to be, right? If you want to keep it small, intimate, then keep it small and intimate. And sometimes one of the factors might be that's all you have capacity for at the moment. It doesn't mean that it won't pivot or change in the future. There's always that possibility. Or if you want to make it a bigger thing, that's, that you can register under OJA and have it on Smooth Comp because it becomes big and all that stuff, then it's like, well, I mean, there's a lot of coordination and logistics involved that maybe sometimes people aren't aware of in terms of these competitions. Or even just event management or coordination planning overall, right? There's
It's a
also
lot.
like, you need to pay for space, you need to pay for mats, you need to pay for coat, like the referees, all that stuff. So it just depends on what you want it to be. I don't think anybody can dictate that for you because this is your thing. It's not anybody else's. But at the end, like, if your goal is to keep it small and intimate and more local and friendly, keep it small. If you wanted to, have it become this big thing, then there's things that you need to think about and consider if you want to do that.
Yeah.
So again, it depends on what you want to do. Very, like I said, very Libra answer.
Okay. No, that is helpful. Of course, like I've said this before, like I lean towards the smaller. Why? Because I like the intimacy of it. It's fun. It's just kind of like, you know, it's like a big group of friends there. And when you lose that, you lose the intimacy and you lose that atmosphere, right? It is a lot of work. Because I pretty much like of course I have a lot of volunteers who come on the day of, but all the back end work is me alone, and I have no problem doing that. I enjoy doing it, or I wouldn't do it. But it is a lot of work to kind of like do all the promotions, do all the logistical work, all that kind of stuff. You know, rent the hall, do all these things, and I have no problem doing these things. And of course, we've had so much support, but it's almost like we have a lot of competitions in Toronto already. Like it's pretty super saturated with competitions. Like there's a lot during the year. There's little ones, big ones, like, but there's a lot. Like the market, I guess you could say, in the metropolitan area of Toronto and the and surrounding area is big. And there's so many of them. I don't know if we need yet another really big competition. Like we could grow it, of course. If that was my goal, yeah, we change the venue, make it really big. It would be unique because it could stay as a charity tournament. right? It could be a free tournament based on only sponsorships, right? It could be done, of course, right? There's a model for that. But then it would just be, I think, just another
competition.
What would make it unique, right? Mm-hmm. I would rather, like, if I had to, and this is another idea we've been spitballing, like, with just some friends and different people, is that, like, I would much rather do a smaller kind of intimate events and even do it multiple times a year, right? Again, like, I don't like to keep going back to the, like, who's number one thing, right? But what is the who's number one kind of model in the States, right? Where you have certain events, there's a fight card, right? People go, they buy tickets, whatever, they sit, they have dinner, they drink, and they watch the fight, right? And then that happens, like, multiple times during the year in multiple locations, right? But I would rather keep it small and have that small kind of, you know, atmosphere. But, like, let's say you could do, if we were to ever to expand, right now, I don't know if I could do more than once a year, 'cause it's a lot of work, but, like, you do the blue belt version of it. You could do a purple belt version of it on a different day. So maybe you could do one in the winter. You could do one in the summer.
Like, break it up.
Break it up. Yeah. Yeah. You could do, like, the bunker tournament blue, the bunker tournament purple, right? Purple edition, whatever. Right. And it would be smaller, but it would be, like, the same people. Obviously, a lot of the same people will come and watch it. But I would rather have that. So you keep kind of, like, that smaller thing. And so you are expanding. You are doing it more often, but you're not making into what everything else is. And then you lose your identity and you lose the beauty of it, the feel of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's where I'm gravitating towards. But I always ask my guests because I think I'm going to start asking a little more. on purpose, because you know, you guys have insight that I might be missing or good points. So I value your opinion.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's kind of similar in my head. It's kind of similar to asking an instructor, like, how come you don't open up your own gym? Well, because it changes.
Like, yeah,
there's more responsibility. You have to switch your mindset a little bit. And some people either don't want to do it, or they know that if it changes, the joy of something will change and it might go away, right?
So yes,
you're doing this because, you know, you're giving back to the community. This is something that you're passionate about, that you want to do. And if you make a change, I'm not saying that change is bad, because sometimes change is good and it's needed, but mm-hmm. you know, it's you got to be mindful or take into consideration, if you change it to be something else, what's the impact, right? Mm. Not only to the community, but also to yourself. And is it going to make you happy? That's kind of why I kind of, I did have another teaching opportunity and I did try it out, and I'm grateful for the opportunity, but I, you know, stepped away from it because at the end of the day, it was taking me away from training, which brings me personally a lot of joy. And mm-hmm. I know that it was not good for me mentally, in a sense. Take it how you will. But so that's why I stepped away from that opportunity.
More is not always better.
Yeah. So, I mean, you gotta figure out what are your goals for whatever you're doing, and is it going to make you happy? Because at the end of the day, we're doing jiu-jitsu because we get some sort of benefit out of it, because it brings us some sort of happiness or satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And if it once it becomes, I've noticed this a lot, once it becomes feeling like a chore, mm-hmm. or just rote movement or rote action, then it becomes meaningless. And
yes,
you know, some people are okay with that. Personally, I'm not. So that's why I say, you know, I won't give like a, you should do this, you should do that, in terms of these big questions. It's like, it's something that you have to figure out for yourself. So, like, you got to do you, man.
100%. And I think on that note, that's a good place to end. We hit an hour exactly. And I think it's a wonderful time to kind of bring it to a close. Although I'm really enjoying the conversation. Grace, thank you very much. Not only for taking the time to come on the podcast, but also for taking the time to, like, be a great mentor and a good training partner, a good friend, like, because
you
know, you've been all those things, at least to me, and I know to a lot of other people, and I really enjoy training with you. You're always generous with your time, and and just generous as a human being. And I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the podcast, and I will be very generous with the chokes.
That's a good deal. That's a good trade. All right. And on that note, we'll say goodbye to everybody, and we'll see everyone the next week. Take care, everybody. All right.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiujitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.